What are you talking about?
What kind of talk is this anyway?
Theology Thursday with Steve-O and Mateo, featuring Pastors Brian Nixon and Jared Petro.
Here it comes.
Let's begin.
Yes, indeed.
Hey, y'all.
It is 9 o'clock. It is Thursday, which means Theology Thursday. Joined in studio by Pastor Brian Nixon. Welcome to the show.
Great being here with you guys. Of course, Jarrett is en route from California. He was at a pastor's conference with Pastor Skip Heitzik, and he is now flying back. So he's not with us here today, but that's okay. The trilogy is going to have as much fun, if not more fun.
More.
Telling you.
I'm just kidding. We miss you, Petro. Get back here. We are going to have some fun today, though. I'm really excited for today's Theology Thursday. We got some good topics. If you would like to chime in, if you have questions, you can submit them either by email, which is studio@mystaticradio.com. We check it 24/7.
24/7.
Right here on this crappy computer,
crappy.
Circa 1998,
so
y'all.
Crappy.
Or you can call us with your technological wonder called a phone. At 338-3700, 338-3700, and hang out with us this morning.
You know what makes it nice when people actually call in that number, 338-3700, is we get to hear their voice.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. We get to learn their name and hear what's on their heart. So if you have a question, please give us a call, particularly for Steve-O or Mateo, because they always give such profound answers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man. Totally. Like this one. Germany.
Germany,
Argentina.
Let me just try to set the stage for our people.
One.
First of all, in Brazil, World Cup soccer is almost like a religion. It truly is something that transcends even like the Super Bowl here in America. So when Germany came in and walloped poor Brazil 7-1. It was something that literally shook the nation.
Yeah.
It would almost be like them being attacked militarily by some other country. I mean, it was that big of a deal.
Yeah.
And still the ramifications are there. But let me say, and forgive all our listeners who were rooting for Brazil, but I was rooting for Germany. And not only that, I projected that Germany would be in the final. Not only that, I projected three of the four. The only one I was wrong was Netherlands, because I said, here's going to be the four you're going to see in the semifinals. You're going to see Germany, which I knew was going to be in the final. Brazil, Argentina, and then the one I didn't expect, as I initially said, Spain would be in the top four. But when they went out, I said, well, naturally, it'd have to be the Netherlands. So I actually hit it pretty good.
Good job, buddy.
Yep.
You not only know good things about like the gospel and stuff, but you know about football. So
I know about football, and so it's going to be an exciting final this weekend. But that's not why we're here. We could spend the whole time talking about football,
really,
but we got to talk about the Bible.
I feel like Brazil has to beat the Netherlands in the third place match, or else there's going to be riots.
Yeah, if they do not beat the Netherlands, which let me just tell you right now. Well, right now, Netherlands is a better team.
Yeah.
But with Van Persie being sick, and he truly did have a stomach flu, and Robin really wasn't playing up to his best against Argentina, who knows what's going to happen. But if you were to compare them right now, Netherlands should beat Brazil.
Then
they should just get on a plane and get out of the country.
As fast as they can.
That's right. Get out.
338-3700. 338-3700.
Good segue.
Man, we got so many different topics. We could go anywhere with this morning.
We do.
Phoenix, the world is your oyster.
Well, you know, I was reading some articles yesterday. Increased persecution of Christians in China.
Yeah.
Of course, the Christian gal in Sudan, persecution there. Mm-hmm. Of course, persecution increasing in Nigeria and other parts of the world. So I thought, how appropriate that we should maybe start this broadcast by talking about persecution, because it is something that is not only relevant to the world in which we live. Christians are being persecuted left and right around the world, but it also has biblical overtones, meaning the Bible talks about it. So I thought it fits well into what we're doing.
Were you overwhelmed when you walked in here?
Yeah, and then I walk into your studio, and I look at Persecution t-shirts.
Everywhere.
I see everything.
Everywhere.
And then Matt Mateo visits me yesterday and goes, you know, B-Nix, we are going to Hollywood next week to on the red carpet to be with the red carpet premiere of the movie Persecuted. So I thought, man, that's cool. Maybe the Lord's wanting us to talk about Persecution.
Yeah.
So here we are talking about
Absolutely.
Persecution.
Title sponsor, by the way, Persecuted the Movie, releases July 18th. Details, persecutedmovie.com. And we've got some Persecuted t-shirts, actually, from the film. And maybe, you know, if you give us a call, get on, get a
call.
Question in, we'll throw one your way.
Doug will take your info.
3700, the phone number. But let's start there. We you know, Voice of the Martyrs, we partner with them.
Yes.
And recently we've been hearing this one, and I wish I could remember the country she's in, but a believer, her family, Muslims, and she was recently sentenced to death. She was pregnant. She has a two-year-old daughter and then now a newborn daughter, and they have sentenced her to death, but they are staying the execution until her youngest turns 2 years old. But, I mean, she's still... She will be executed for her faith, and she refuses to relent on that.
Yeah. Persecution is a real reality around the world.
Can we talk about the... obviously, we're going to dig into it pretty deeply, but I would love to talk about persecution. And because I think a lot of times we're like, man, I was at Walmart, and I was wearing my Lord's Gym t-shirt, and this dude jumped in line and scoffed at my Jesus t-shirt, persecuted.
And that dude that was scoffing was Mateo.
Yeah, that's not persecution.
Right.
That's just a... You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's very real.
I think at this juncture in America... We elevate persecution of Christians. In reality, there is some what I would call minor persecutions. But when we're talking about the level that we're seeing around the world, be it in China or Africa or the Middle East, that level of persecution is truly a whole different level. However, saying that, now, there can be persecution here in America. And, of course, the movie that you guys referenced by Daniel Lesko, it does talk about, you know, it hits on that theme a little bit.
Yeah.
But for the most part, the type of persecution we get is more political at this time and or personal. And those are the type of things where Christians are becoming less and less able to share their faith or do what their conscience holds them or what scripture bounds them to and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe we'll get to a little bit later talking about the Hobby Lobby case and all of
type
of stuff. So we could talk about the political ramifications later.
Okay.
But the persecution, there are levels of it. But, you know, true, you know, the ultimate persecution is when people's lives are the chopping block.
Totally.
Prison. And, you know, I always tell people, when people go, I want to learn more about persecution, I always say, you know what? You need to turn to some books that people have walked through and lived through. And the two I always tell people to get, if they really want to understand persecution in its truest sense, the first one I say is Tortured for Christ by Richard Wurmbrand, who is the founder of Voice of the Martyrs.
Okay.
I'm a huge supporter. I am a big fan, if you will, of the Voice of the Martyrs because Richard Wurmbrand is one of my heroes of the faith. And Richard Wurmbrand, you talk about persecution. This guy was imprisoned. He was beat. He was, you know, on the verge of death in the communist bloc in his day. And he lived to write about his story.
Wow.
And the Voice of the Martyrs was the book or the organization that he founded.
I never knew that story.
So Tortured for Christ is a book that I recommend all Christians to read. It has a profound effect on the individual. And then the second one is The Hiding Place by Corrie Ten Boom.
Okay.
You know, she was, obviously they were hiding Jews in Holland. They were, you know, found out.
Yeah.
They were put in prison. Her sister died. Persecution, you know, to a certain extent occurred with them. But she has such a beautiful and graceful way. And in both of those books, and why I mentioned both of them, they have such a graceful understanding of loving those who have persecuted you.
See, that's an aspect you don't hear a lot of. Because books like Fox's Book of Martyrs or, you know, DC Talk jumped on board and they have the Jesus Freaks books. Those books, bluntly it's really difficult for me to read those because there's none of that. It's simply this dude, 1472, head cut off. This dude. I mean, it's just like story after story after story of nothing but people murdered for their faith.
Right.
And it's important to know those stories, but you don't see any of that, as you're saying, from Corrie Ten Boom's story of the love and the grace and the compassion.
Right. Yeah.
You don't get that. You just get, it's very like, it's very heavy.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what I'm saying. And, and granted, a lot of the people who were murdered for their faith were unable to talk about their feelings and the forgiveness and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So why I point people to Richard Wurmbrand or Corrie Ten Boom is because they lived to tell the story and what was going on in their heart. So if you're listening, do yourself a favor and get those books, because we could sit here and we could throw out theology, we could theorize about it, but they lived it, and I really recommend people to do that. But let me talk about persecution from a biblical standpoint, if you don't mind. And I'm just going to cover three quick elements in relationship to persecution. Number one is that persecution is expected. And that is because Jesus predicted it. And I could go into more scripture verses than three, but the three that come to mind are Matthew 5:10, where Jesus says, "Blessed are they which are persecuted." That's his disciples, his followers, Christians. So Jesus is saying, blessed are you, happy are you. You will be persecuted. And that's just the reality of it.
You're like, sweet, man.
Right.
Yeah.
Bring it on.
And that's right. And then later in Matthew 5:44, he says, "But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you." Again, Jesus understanding that we will, as Christians, be persecuted. And thirdly, in Jesus' prediction of Christians' persecution is in John, he says, "If the world hates you, know that it has hated me before it hated you." So again, he's basically alluding to the fact that the world system, if you will hate you. It will hate what you stand for, and because of that, persecution will arise. So the first point is Jesus did predict that Christians will be persecuted. But then secondly, the disciples experienced that persecution. Yeah. So Jesus said, you will be persecuted, but then the disciples, those first generation believers, lived it. Peter, talked about it in his letter. He said, it's better to suffer for doing good if it should be for God's will than doing evil. So basically he's saying, we're going to suffer because we're trying to do good. Peter also says, but even if you should suffer for righteousness' sake, you will be blessed. Again, alluding to the fact that there will be suffering and persecution. The Apostle John says, don't be surprised, brothers, that the world hates you.
Right.
This persecution, this hatred will come. And Paul, in Philippians, he lived it. He was imprisoned. He was persecuted. And in his letter to the Philippians, he says, I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me, persecution, imprisonment, etc., is for the furtherance of the gospel. So not only did Jesus predict that persecution would come, the disciples lived and experienced that persecution, which leads us to the third point, is that all believers may face persecution one day in our life.
Yeah.
And where do we get the scriptural basis for that? Well, Jesus, in his high priestly prayer in John 15, Jesus is praying for the future of all believers. And in this prayer, he says, if they have persecuted me, they will persecute you, meaning they is the world system, the world's economy, how they view things. Because why? We're standing for Christ. We're standing for what is good, and the world doesn't always stand for that. So those three points: Jesus predicted it, disciples experienced it, and all believers may face persecution, on some level in our life.
And again, in America, it's much different.
Yeah.
I think here, a lot of times, you're driving down Paseo and there's construction. And you're like, oh, I got to get over to the left and nobody's letting you in. It's like, it's because of my Jesus fish. Persecution.
Ah! Right.
It's like, dude, that's not persecution.
Right.
Because you're a terrible driver.
Get over it.
Yeah.
You're in a car in America driving down the road with the Jesus fish. Get over it.
And we like to read into things.
We really do.
We do. We read into things. But the reality is, we've pointed out, there are Christians around the world. And I want to challenge our listeners and the people who podcast this around the world.
Yeah.
Pray for those who are persecuted.
Yes.
Get involved with organizations such as Voice of the Martyrs. Understand what is going on in the world. Go to Assist News Service. Dan Wooding, the British journalist who started Assist News Service, began Assist News Service as a way to bring to light, to shed news on what is going on around the world. Of course, Assist News Service has expanded since that, covering religion, culture, and other things. But its initial launch was to come alongside those who are persecuted and give them a voice, those who are voiceless. So we as Christians really need to be praying for those who are suffering for their faith.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're seeing it. I mean, if you're involved, if you're engaged, it's happening everywhere. We've seen imprisonment. We've seen suffering. We've seen torturing. We've seen death for Christians in other parts of the world.
Yeah.
And obviously, that's just not super talked about in mainstream media, because what's more important is where Kim and Kanye are spending their
money. Well, something that I think is interesting, too.
Right.
Jesus, when he was doing this, you know, he's a Jew. And he was talking to Jewish people. And the Jewish people traditionally were one of the most persecuted people, especially in the Bible, because it's all about them. But anyway, the, you know, slaves in Egypt, then they're free. And then they're slaves of Babylon, and then they're free. And then they're slaves in Assyria, and then they're free. You know, so it's always slavery, 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 persecution, persecution. And they had that hope, you know, that at the end of time, God would fix everything.
Yeah.
And then Jesus comes along, and he was like, oh, you're going to be persecuted. And I think they thought the military aspect of the Messiah was going to be, he's going to come around and he's going to make us be the best and he's going to defeat all of our enemies and all his persecution is going to disappear. So the thing to me that sticks out a lot is that Jesus said, no, you're going to be persecuted. And not only that, he took it a step farther and said, and here's how you handle it when you're persecuted.
That's right.
And it's completely different than the military uprisings of the people in the intertestamental, you know.
Yeah, and Matt, I just want to reiterate what you just said. Persecution will come.
Yeah.
But the point is how we handle it. We can be retaliatory. We could fight back. We could try to, you know, kill them. And maybe at times something like that may be necessary. I don't know. That's open for debate.
Yeah.
But what we find is people who have went through pure persecution and have had to rely on the Lord, what happens is they do have a heart of forgiveness. They want to love their enemy. They want to see that person open up their lives to the love of God in Christ. And that's, again, coming full circle back to the hiding place and tortured for Christ. You know, Richard Wurmbrand went through truly living hell.
Yeah.
And when you read his book, the love he has for the Russians, the love he has for his, you know, the fellow captors and so on and so forth is pretty grand. And that's what makes these stories engaging, is because they just didn't want to retaliate and come back and drop a nuclear bomb on him. Right. They wanted to come back and drop the bomb of love, you know, the love of Christ and those people's life. And at the end of The Hiding Place with Corrie Ten Boom, I won't spoil it for our readers, but there's a beautiful scene when she actually meets one of the people that were in prison. And what she said to that person brings tears to your eyes. So, Matt, I couldn't agree with you more. It's how we respond to persecution. So let's even take it back to something simple. Let's just say someone does cut me off because I have a Jesus sticker. I'm being persecuted. Is the right thing to speed up and, you know, throw them the bird and, you know, I know where you live. You know, you better
horn,
you better
scream.
Watch it. Or is the, you know, the proper thing to do to, you know, pray for them at that moment. Lord, I don't know what's going on in that person. I'm going to slow down and trust that you have a purpose in this. You know, our response to that, you know, Jesus said it himself, you know, love your enemies. Love those who persecute you. And that is truly what makes Christians different from the world, that we are putting into practice the conduct of love and consideration and kindness and compassion, even towards those people that are doing us ill will. And that is a huge thing for us to contemplate.
It's funny because that's exactly what we were talking about this morning with Clay Schroff from the Aspen Project, about getting involved as godly men, being mentors to others. And it goes directly into Ephesians chapter 5, what I was saying this morning, therefore be imitators of God as beloved children. You know, this morning, Beenix, we were talking about you know, our kids and how they imitate everything we do. And as beloved children, if we truly love God as our daddy, as our father, we will be imitators of him. And that's it. I highly doubt Christ would have sped up and flipped somebody off and screamed and made sure somebody knew that they cut them off. Or, and yet, you're right. The way we respond, the way we react to certain situations really shows the heart of it.
Yeah. And think of it this way. And this is popular in some churches, this little saying, but it makes a lot of sense when you think about it, you know, on a personal relational level.
Yeah.
When Jesus says, love your enemies, I don't think he meant to kill them.
Well, see, okay, here's a really good theological question, because we were having a discussion recently. There's a work of fiction based on scripture called A Tale of Three Kings. Have you read it, Gene Edwards? And the idea there is you never throw a spear, never throw a spear. David had opportunity multiple times to kill Saul. He could have taken him out. When his son tried to overthrow him, he never threw that spear. He never killed his son. He could have killed Saul, could have killed his son. Instead, he just kind of stood back and very pacifistically said, God's got this. I'm in his hands. He's going to take care of me. And then there are others that say, no, man, that's not the way Jesus rolls. Meek and mild. He was flipping tables in the, you know, and he was up in the face of the religious right. And so how do we respond?
Huge, huge question, Steve-O.
I know.
Huge.
Hey, because, we got 40 minutes. It's Theology Thursday.
Yeah. Well, because very true. There's basically four major views when it comes to, let's say, war, violence.
Right.
They range from complete pacifism.
Okay.
And that's where Christians, you know, and this would be like the Quakers, the Mennonite, the Brethren, who would say Christians on any level are not to engage in war. Then you would find those people who, it's a variance of pacifism, but it's not what we'd call full-orb pacifism.
Okay.
These people would say Christians are not to engage in hostile aggression.
Okay.
Thirdly, you would have what we would call the just war theory, which was basically in its the infancy of it, or its nutshell seed, was put out by St. Augustine. And that's the idea that there is such thing as a just war. And the idea goes something like this. If you see a child in the middle of the road in a speeding car, Augustine obviously didn't use this.
Right.
But this is an updated version of it.
He was from
it's
the
my
future.
Obligation as a Christian to go and save that child.
Right.
So there is a just war. So if I see an aggressor beating up on someone as a Christian person or quote unquote a Christian nation, it's my obligation to go and stop that. So there's that third. So you go from complete pacifism, excuse me, to partial pacifism, that you could only be on the side of a protector, not an aggressor. Then the just war theory, which justifies a war. And then the fourth, which is what a lot of people pick up on, and it really is the far right extremist. And some people take it to the point, I really believe, and do it injustice. But that's the idea that when you look at the Bible, God was always engaged in some kind of battlement. So it's completely fine for Christians to be in any kind of engagement, because that's really how God does things. He wins by war. Now, the rebuttal to that particular view is that in the Old Testament, which we primarily see most of the wars and violence and so on and so forth, was a theonomy, meaning God was leading that, not the nation. Those were God were saying, okay, this is something seriously wrong is going on here. I've got to take care of this. It was God directed.
Okay.
After that, it became nations. And then, interestingly enough, when you start studying when the king started to rule, God actually had started to have problems with some of the wars and some of the ways things were handled, because it wasn't just.
Right.
It wasn't righteous war. God is the only arbitrator of what is pure justice and pure righteousness. So when he himself is leading, we can rest assured to say, okay, God is leading. Therefore, I may not have the big picture, but he knows.
Yeah.
When it turns over to a nation, a king, or so on and so forth, then the question is it purely just? Is it purely righteous? Mm-hmm. And that's where you have to go back to the just war theory, and there's biblical principles, there's so on and so forth. And so that's why I was saying at the beginning, it's a very complicated question with viewpoints within the church on all sides. I personally think there is some biblical support for what we call full pacifism.
Okay.
I definitely believe there is biblical support for partial pacifism. I definitely believe there's biblical support for just war theory.
Okay.
I do not necessarily agree with the fourth, what we call the ultra right wing position,
right.
The militaristic, I'm just going to get in there because God got in there and God's on our side.
Right.
I don't believe that. And as a matter of fact, if you want a great book on that kind of rebuttals that viewpoint, Werner Deller, who was a pacifist himself, but he wrote a book called War from Genesis to Revelation. And essentially what he does is he gives an overview of war in the Bible. And he's the one that pinpoints and says, listen, the early wars, the ones that were directed by God, were just they because they were from God. But
right.
once it became a nation state or a king thing, it becomes gray.
Yeah.
And so I recommend our readers to pick up some Werner Deller because he does a really good job, at least in supporting a particular viewpoint, but dismantling this whole, really militaristic right-wing ideology.
Yeah, and people get heated on it, man.
They
I remember one time we were talking about my son being bullied on the playground, and he didn't super retaliate. He didn't, punch the kid back. He didn't, And there were those who were like, whoa, 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 you're teaching your kid to be a puss. Like, you can't do that.
You can't say that.
And then you'd have the moms who were like, no, you did a really good job, sweetheart. That's good.
Well, I think you look at, because most of, and growing up in the South, it's, and now especially, it's super trendy. A lot of it coming from, I think, Mars Hill stuff, 15 years ago or whatever, when Jesus all of a sudden turned into like this
macho confrontational MMA fighter.
This MMA fighter.
Yeah.
And it was like, man, he had a tattoo in Revelation and I can do whatever I want. But the thing to me that sticks out
and it's
is
not just Mars Hill.
That's when I first encountered it.
Yeah.
Was when I was reading like Mark Driscoll's stuff and reading about Mars Hill. And that's when that idea was introduced to me.
Yeah.
So I'm not putting all the blame on him.
Oh, yeah. No,
because I'm sure that. According to recent stuff, he probably copied it from somebody else.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry. But anyway, so my thing was, people use that as like, that's the rule. But in reality, if you look at the whole scope of the gospel, that was like the one time where we saw Jesus get full-on active.
And
full-on start. So my thing is like, you can't just go and take an exception and start saying.
Exactly. And let's fast forward to Revelation.
Yeah.
What do we find in Revelation? People go, well, it's so violent. But who is directing? It's back to God.
God's in charge.
God ultimately is the arbitrator, the pure arbitrator of what is just and right. So God is the only one who could purely look at a situation and says, this demands some sort of swift action. That doesn't mean at times war is not necessary. At times, let's just say, Germany, even though I'm going for Germany in the World Cup,
weren't going for Germany in 1942
in the World War.
and that's exactly right. But Germany, someone had to stand up. And that's where the just war theory, partial pacifism, all these type of things come into play. So it is not as clear cut as some people try to make it out to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
And by the way, to our pacifist friends out there, I was a licensed minister in the Brethren Church, and I completely understand the pacifist viewpoint. And I know for all our brethren and Mennonite and Quaker friends who may be listening to this broadcast going, well, you don't really have a full grasp on it. Actually, I do.
Right.
I was a minister within the Brethren Church. I understand the position. Just because
I wonder why you were so sweet. I
may not agree with complete pacifism.
Yeah.
Right. Partial pacifism to the just war theory is more my cup of tea. But the reality is I do emphatically believe the Bible does not teach what we would call the aggressive right-wing,
right, be it
any church or any group that kind of promotes that, get in your face, knock people out.
Yeah.
Because, again, like I said, there is too much scriptural reference against that, and particularly Jesus himself. His actions in the temple were justified.
Yeah.
Again, God in human flesh leading those. But I would recommend our listeners, if they want to, you know, really tackle it some more, the actual full title of Werner Deller's book is King Jesus Manual of Arms for the Armless, or War and Peace from Genesis to Revelation.
That's a big old
title. It's a title, but from War and Peace from Genesis to Revelation, Werner Deller. And he really does a great job at dismantling what we'd call that far right view. But all that said and done, bringing it full circle, persecution is a reality. And Christians are part of this world. You know, we're engaged in this world. So we will have to live through persecution, and we'll have to think seriously about those issues, such as war and violence and other things.
Right. And that was what I was going to say is the next step there is, you know, we see when does the government get involved? Because there's a prisoner over in Iran, and this is a Christian, and they're going to be executed. And then the U.S. government gets involved, and then we have a full-scale war. Or is this, you know, because you look back to New Testament and you see Stephen, you see, I mean, you want to go to the original Fox's Book of Martyrs, you go to Hebrews, where, what is it, 12, 13, where you see the heroes of the faith, and it's like, dudes were sawn in half and mauled by lions and all these, and there was no war, really. There was no nation that...
I think the difference is, here in America, our persecution is a different level, and I think the problem comes when we have people that coin something as persecution, and then they use examples like Jesus getting violent, and they use examples from the Old Testament or from the Book of Revelation, and then they fly into a rage, and they're like, no, I'm totally justified in this, when in reality what they're doing is they're picking and choosing. And the funniest thing about it, the most ironic thing, is the people that you hear the most saying you can't pick and choose are the super conservative, hard inerrancy people that say, no, you can't pick and choose the Bible, but in those moments, we're picking and choosing.
Right.
You know, and that's a fine line to walk. And don't get me wrong, everybody. I believe there's just war.
Right.
Totally. I'm not full on pacifist. Right. I'm with B-Nex walking along. I think we all are, but...
I was quick to pick a fight when somebody was getting bullied at school. I'm not gonna say
and
that
if your kid
I'm
was out in the road,
pacifist, right.
All of us would be jumping out
there. Yeah, no question. Right, the way I look at it is when it comes down to a personal level, if someone came into my house with the intention of doing harm to my family, you better believe I would retaliate.
Oh, absolutely. There's
no question in my mind. I, as the protector of my family, would retaliate. And I think if you extend that principle to the larger, you know, let's say the United States of America, I believe the government has a responsibility, a governmental responsibility, to protect its citizens. Mm-hmm. So let's say our blessed friends up north, the Canadians, all of a sudden decide, we're going to come down and we're going to attack the United States of America. Guaranteed.
They would never.
I know they wouldn't.
That would be hilarious. And by the way, Saturday Night Live.
It'd be really quick.
We love our Canadian friends.
Yeah,
we do. Canada's beautiful. I love Canadians. I have many Canadian friends. But if they decided to attack, you better believe that we would have to protect ourselves.
Oh, absolutely.
That is our obligation.
Yeah.
Now, again, where it comes to the just war theory is when's the Christian's responsibility to be the aggressor?
Right.
And just war and partial pacifism would say never. We never should be the aggressor. We should never say, you know what? I'm going to go out there and be the bully. That's the major question right there.
Right.
But Steve-O, you brought up something. So let's leave persecution here for a moment
and
move to the second realm of discussion, and that's politics. Mm-hmm. You know, when is it politically right for Christians to get engaged, and or when is it politically apropos for the government to, you know, get involved, let's say, in this Sudanese woman's behalf, or the American Calvary Chapel pastor who's been in the Saudi prison for a long time. So, you know, those are some really interesting questions, you know, politically. And then even more let's say, hitting home is, you know, Hobby Lobby, who obviously is owned by very strong, devout Christians,
yeah.
you know, taking the government to court over the issue of you know,
Parthol, or whatever, late term.
You know, basically paying for, exactly, paying crap. For abortion. Mm-hmm. And so how are Christians to engage in the political realm? And you know, in this short period of time, we really can't, you know, unpack this to its fullness. But let me just give some basic principles when it, you know, when we're talking about politics and the Christian. And the first thing we need to say is that Jesus, contrary to what people think, was political.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is when Jesus says, "I am Lord," what is he not saying? Caesar yeah. is not Lord, or the United States is not Lord, or Germany's not Lord, or UK or Sudan or, you know, Saudi Arabia, Brazil. When Jesus says, "I am Lord," he means I am Lord of all. Right. I am the King. And so that very statement has political overtones. Mm-hmm. That's why, again, that Christians are persecuted, because we're saying our allegiance, our country, what I am a citizen of first and foremost is of the kingdom of Christ.
Yeah.
And because of that, my kingdom at times will come into conflict with other kingdoms, be them earthly kingdoms or spiritual kingdoms, and that's why persecution will arise. So Jesus was political, and because of that, there were political connotations. You know, the early Christians were persecuted because they were saying, "I am following now a different kingdom. I have a new Lord. The Messiah has come, and I am following him." And that ruffled a lot of feathers, be it the Jewish feathers, be yeah. it the Roman feathers, be it the larger religious, socio-religious feathers of the Middle East. But that doesn't necessarily mean Jesus went and ran for office, or that he basically said, you know, do this. But inherent in what he said had political connotations.
Yeah.
But at the same time, and I need to point this out, I think we can make a case that Jesus recognized the difference between the two spheres of God's kingdom and man's kingdom, if you will. And one of the clearest declarations we have about that is when Jesus was confronted with paying your taxes.
Right.
Jesus, what did he say? Give to Caesar's what is Caesar's, and give to God's what is God's. So what we could read in that, though there's different interpretations of this, but I think generally speaking, we could basically say Jesus recognized that there is a political realm,
right.
and that you do need to pay your taxes. You do need to live life within that realm. But on the other hand, you Christians are part of a larger kingdom. You're part yeah. of a larger, you know, agenda than just what is Caesar's at the time, or just the United States at this time, or anywhere you live. So I think Jesus did recognize the difference between the two. So the question is, not that Jesus wasn't political, because he was, and not that Jesus didn't recognize the difference between the two, you know, the political and the spiritual. He did.
Right.
But the question is, how are we as Christians to engage and interact with the political realm?
Yeah.
Again, going back to Matt's point.
Yeah.
How are we to respond in times as these? And interestingly enough, Relevant Magazine, which I know you guys are fans of Relevant Magazine mm-hmm. as well, they put out an article a couple years back about, you know, what are Christians to do in response to the political world, the realm of politics. And I thought they got some great points. I would recommend that you go to Relevant Magazine to actually look at their article. But I kind of gleaned from what they said and kind of put them into my own points. So here's some thoughts to throw out and for you to chew on and ponder. But, you know, here when we're dealing with politics, we have to understand that, at least here in America, both political parties have Christians within that party.
What?
We yeah. may disagree with the principles of one party over the other, but we have to understand there are true brothers and sisters in that political party. Therefore, it behooves us as Christians to love our yeah. brethren.
I still write in Ronald Reagan every time I vote.
Yeah. but understanding we have family members on yeah. the other side,
yeah,
hopefully will bring perspective. But secondly, politics, we have to understand that politics seek ratings and followers.
Yeah.
They want people on their side. but they don't always have a biblical perspective. And that's on both sides or all sides of the political fence.
Yeah.
You know, they're not looking to be necessarily biblical. They're wanting to have an agenda, political followers, and they want to have ratings. So what we as Christians have to do is look at all parties in all situations biblically. Yeah. We have to say, Lord, I need to put on the lens of the Bible as entrusted to us by the Holy Spirit and look at these situations biblically. But thirdly, we have to love people on all sides of the political engagement.
Yeah.
You know, we can, Steve, you and I'm sure would disagree about some things, and we need to keep it civil.
Yeah.
We need to keep it where we could talk and stand firmly where we stand,
yeah,
but not hate and get to what we would call in logic ad hominem attacks, where I'm just right, saying, you know, all of a sudden you do something that I can't respond to, so I just go, you know, you're just ugly, and you're, you know what, you're an idiot. If you weren't so stupid, those are what we call ad hominem attacks. We're attacking the person, not the argument. Christians shouldn't attack the person unless there's true reason to attack the person. We should attack the arguments and try to the best of the ability. Exactly.
You get emotional, you say stupid things. You mentioned earlier, we were talking about the Jews and how they've always been slaves.
Yeah.
And then in John 8, I was just reading this week, Jesus is like, hey, slave to sin or slave to righteousness? And the Jews are like, we have never been slaves, sir.
Yeah.
We are free. We have always been free. And Jesus was probably just like, man, you guys are idiots.
Did you forget your history?
Are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah. You remember that book you memorized?
We say stupid things.
Yeah. And let me say, speaking of book, on this idea of for Christians to have a reasonable, you know, civil argument.
Yeah.
Oz Guinness, I believe, and I use this with the small p, is prophetic in his last two books, where he talks about civility and how we as Christians are to engage in the political realm.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a new one that he just put out called the Public the Public Square, where he talks about what we as Christians are to do politically and to be engaging, but at the same time civil.
Yeah.
So I recommend our listeners or the people listening through podcasts, pick up Oz Guinness's book, his last three books, one on civility, one on freedom, one on the public square. All of these will give us great principles to engage on a political realm with civility and clarity.
Well, I think the problem is right now, I don't care if you prefer MSNBC, CNN, or Fox News, or whatever platform it is when you're talking about politics, because you know that whatever show it is, all right, here's the super Republican show. Mm-hmm. We're going to have the Democrat guest on. Let's make him look like a complete idiot.
Yeah.
Don't even let him finish sentences.
Ratings.
You're an idiot.
Ratings.
Or you go to CNN and it's like all
let's
left,
have the backwoods.
Really, 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 really left. Now let's get this backwoods idiot Republican on so that we can fucking demolish him, make him look like an idiot. And there's no civility on either side.
Exactly. And by the way, that doesn't, other than get your ratings high, it doesn't do anything for
nothing.
The situation.
Right.
And then there's BBC.
Yeah. Then there's BBC.
Truth.
Which I do watch BBC.
Yeah.
So let me finish up this list from Relevant,
just to
equip our listeners here. So not only are we to love people on both sides, keeping it civil, but we really need to know that both sides or all sides of the political, they are flawed human beings.
Yeah.
No one is the perpetrator of truth other than God himself, as outlined in Scripture. And then it gets very practical. We need to pray for our leaders, irregardless if we agree with them or not. The Bible is emphatic about that we're to pray for those above us, we're to respect authority. We could fully disagree with them, but we're to do that. And then another thing that I've kind of highlighted this, and this isn't really what Relevant Magazine is saying, but I took it this direction, is that Christians need not believe every conspiracy theory that comes along.
Right.
We have to trust God is in control, and that, you know, whether or not Obama was born in Indonesia or Hawaii and all these type of things, they are, by the way, I do understand the political ramifications of that, but we have to trust the process that Well, they provided a birth certificate. So that birth certificate said Hawaii, whether or not it was doctored or all that. But here's the point. So many conspiracy theories come through the channels. And Christians, sadly, a lot of times, are some of the most gullible. We buy into it, we chew on it, we swallow it, and then we spew it out to others. What we need to do is check our facts. We need to weigh it in light of Scripture. We need to understand the full picture, but never lose sight of the fact that God is in control. It is the Lord who sits on the throne, not us. And then finally, and then I'll let you guys chime in, recognize that each election is important and we need to vote according to biblical principles. And when there's something we, you know, fully don't understand, we need to vote our conscience. Yeah. We need to really vote with like, okay, Lord, I don't know. This is kind of a tough one, but here's where I'm standing. But I know you know, and just help me do this. So again, these seven principles outlined by Relevant Magazine with some of my buttering them up. I would recommend, and I really thought it was a great Christian response to the political realm. But yeah. What ye guys say?
What ye?
Well, I was reminded immediately. Mitch last night sent us all this text, and it was very hilarious, but sadly it was very real life.
So true.
There was an article that said 45 million gallons of crude blood was lost in the Red Cross pipeline rupture. And somebody posted it on Facebook and said, this breaks my heart, mainly because now there will be hundreds of thousands of people that don't get the transfusion they need. Well, this article came from The Onion.
Onion, of course.
Which we know is satire. Oh, yeah. Yep. But people will eat it up,
yeah, right,
no matter what it is. And you're right. I just think of Thessalonians 5:22, where he tells us that we need to test all things.
That's exactly
right.
We've
got to take it all back and love God with all of our mind and freaking use it and actually check the facts before we believe anything from any platform, any aspect ever.
So true. That's journalism 101.
Yes.
And but I believe that is Christianity 101.
Yes.
We need to be people of the truth. So we need to look and ascertain if whether or not what people are saying is truthful.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times, and I've been criticized because, as you guys know, I used to host a national program in Southern California. And a lot of people used to come up to me and go, you know, you're such a doubting Thomas. You know, you always doubt. Your first response is always, you know, you just doubt. Like, you know, brother was blind but Brian, you're always doubting. And it's not because I don't believe in miracles or I don't believe these certain things. I believe my first responsibility as a Christian is to pursue truth of the situation. So before I give some kind of, oh man, you're right, that just happened, I need to go and elicit my cognitive abilities to go, is what is being said true?
Right.
And if it's not, then I need to dispel that non-truth, or I need to present and promote that truth.
So what you're saying, to dispel it, Mom, every time you forward me something about Obama,
probably not true.
I'm just going to respond back and not keep forwarding.
Well, two things too. The other day I found a hilarious picture, and it was, did homosexuality kill the dinosaurs?
And it was, yes!
It was one of the funniest things I have ever seen. And the sad part was, I really did have to go dig, and thankfully found that it was from a satirical church website.
Right,
yeah.
But I was like, oh my gosh, somebody could actually believe this.
Because it was put out from a quote-unquote church.
And it looked like a church thing.
Yeah.
But it was satirical. But then the second thing that I want to point out, too, that I think it sticks out to me, is when Jesus says, give to Caesar what is Caesar's and give to God what is God's, you got two kinds of currency there that stick out to me.
Yeah.
The first being money. Yeah. And we know elsewhere in the New Testament, he quotes the thing where it says you can't serve God and mammon.
Yeah.
So, honestly, all politics in America especially, our money. That's what it all comes down to.
Mm-hmm. We're a capitalist society.
Yeah, if you got the money, you're making the rules. That's just the way it goes. Even our news channels are about ratings, which translates to money. People getting money, that's what it's all about. Jesus says God's currency is like a bigger thing because it's like your time. It's your life. It's your everything. It's you. So we have two different kinds of currency there. So when you give to Caesar what is Caesar's and you give to God what is God's, you're giving yourself to God, and then you're giving these petty things that rule over the world, But thankfully, we have a real God and a real King in Christ that says, hey, guess what? Money's not your God. You're free from that.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, in our capitalist society, and I'm not knocking capitalism because I'm blessed to be a part of it.
I love America.
But it becomes our God. It becomes our God so easily.
That's right. And when you look at the totality of the New Testament, you know, there is so much more spoken about the temptations of money and materialism than a host of other topics. So obviously the New Testament writers and God himself saw to it that that is going to be a temptation for all people, but Christians as well. Let me throw something out because you guys know me. Mm. I have to give resources to our listeners.
Of course. Please,
when we are dealing with a host of topics such as this, you know, politics and just war theory and all of these very important subjects, we need to be equipped. And I'm going to recommend two books to our listeners, both of them by John Stott, who is another hero of mine. John Stott has a book called Christ in Conflict, which is it just came out in a reprint. And in this book, he looks at Jesus, how Jesus interacted in moments of conflict, be it political, be it religious, be it, you know, he goes down the gamut. And John Stott gives a biblical response of how Jesus, according to Scripture, handled those situations. So I recommend our listeners to pick up Christ in Conflict. Also by John Stott, and I use this book so much. I can't tell you how much I rely on this book for so much. But it's called Issues Facing Christians Today by John Stott. Issues Facing Christians Today. And John Stott tackles a plethora of subjects that Christians need to be aware of, be it abortion, homosexuality, war, the environment, all these what we'd call political hot topic buttons.
Yeah.
John Stott tackles from a biblical standpoint. And we as Christians need to pursue truth, as I was saying. So we need to glean from others who have spent time looking at these issues, internalizing them, and then sharing them with us. So I recommend all our listeners to get Issues Facing Christians Today and Christ in Conflict, both by John Stott, because it really does touch on those very hot topic political issues.
And speaking of political issues and incredible books, I would also recommend a great resource. It's called An American Life, The Autobiography of Ronald Reagan. It was written by Ronald Reagan.
You know,
actually, you know what? It's a fantastic book.
No!
I was trying to be funny. Cool. I was going to giggle and grab a W book and a Ronald Reagan book, but...
Can we talk, though, about the great Republican president?
Ronald Reagan?
My cousin,
I was wearing a Ronald
Richard
Reagan t-shirt.
Richard Milhouse Nixon.
Wait, are you...
your cousin?
Are you serious? I didn't know any of this.
You really are.
Cousins!
No, we're not first cousins.
I'm just kidding.
But...
best friends!
Guys...
Yeah, let's talk. We're going to be talking.
You've never... you didn't know that he was my cousin.
No. And this is the best.
Guys, look at my face.
Yeah, you look pretty stoic. Do this.
Yeah. I have the Nixon eyes. I have the Nixon... But
can
the
you
point,
just say I am not a
the
crook?
Point is, Nixon is a great example of politics gone south.
Absolutely.
And that's why we don't put our trust and faith in a man, a person, a political party. We put our faith in a person of Christ who transcends political parties, who transcends that, because he is the full arbitrator. He is the vindication of God.
And speaking of politics, we are going to actually dig in pretty seriously.
Yeah.
Coming up next week, we are sitting down with former Senator Fred Thompson, who is in this new film Persecuted, which is releasing July 18th. And these are some of the questions we're going to talk about. This new film coming out July 18th covers the topic of one man who's an evangelical preacher who is set up for the rape and murder of this young girl because he refuses to back down from the gospel. Fred Thompson in the film, and so we're going to actually talk to him. And I'm excited because, man, ramping up with this political discussion this morning, obviously he's seen it. He was a senator of Tennessee for a decade, you know? So.
Going back to persecution, because Christians aren't having the level of persecution elsewhere around the world, doesn't mean that one day we won't.
Right.
There may be that level of persecution here. So Christians need to become familiar with not only what's happening over there, praying for those who are persecuted, but recognize the signs of persecution and things that can happen. But Great topic today. Persecution, yeah. Politics and the Christian. And again, so many great resources. You could call Parchments. Mm-hmm. You could go to parchments.com.
Yeah.
You could go to your local Christian bookstore. But Oz Guinness, John Stott, Corey Ten Boom, Richard Wurmbrand, those are great things to give you some more insight into the topics we talked about today.
And we'll have a full list of that on our podcast, because we podcast this show every Thursday. Mm-hmm. And if you can't listen to it right now, so you're probably not, but you listen to it later, you know that in the description, all of these resources are listed.
Yeah, absolutely. We got an email, actually, from a listener who's had another resource on persecution, a book that they highly recommend. Was it Vanya?
About a persecuted Christian believer in the 1970s Soviet Army.
Nice.
Wow. Thank you. Yeah. That sounds like a great book.
So there you go. It is, coming to the end of Theology Thursday. Beanix, thanks, man.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, fun time.
Yeah, it was. If you miss any part of the show, of course, mystaticradio.com/TheologyThursday. You can download the podcast, listen to it in its entirety. And as I mentioned, we'll be talking with Fred Thompson from Persecuted. And
listeners know before we go that next week we won't have Theology Thursday because you guys will be in Hollywood. So until 2 weeks from now, God bless you.
Yeah, and so welcome to July 17th, because this is probably what's going to air, because we talked politics and Persecuted, and that's good, because that's exactly where we'll be next week. So,
booyah.
Amazing. Two for one.
Two for one, y'all.
Love it. All right, there you go. That's it for us. We'll see you guys again mañana. Of course, Middays with Mitch on the way next. And,
fun day.
Absolutely. Have a great Thursday. We'll see you next time for Team Awesome Morning Party.
Goodbye.
Static.